in UFO Radio, and tonight we have on our one of our favorite guests, John Kelly, and John is from Vancouver. No, but also he has the website Your Inner Mind. That'd be www.yourinnermind.com. Did I say that?
Your inner voice.
Oh, I mean your inner voice. Okay, I wondered about that. That didn't sound right when I said that, but then anyhow, I figured you'd correct me on it if I was wrong. So it's yourinnervoice.com. And John is starting off our Paranormal Saturday night tonight, and John is an expert in reverse speech therapy. And we got to talking about it. We've talked a little bit about it before, but he kind of piqued my interest on it, and I thought, well, you know, that might be something that you listeners would be wanting to know more about. And not only do you have, are we going to be talking on reverse speech, but John, like I said, is a therapist, and he actually is able to do. I was reading on his website about this, and he's able to do so much just with analyzing a 10-minute tape, a recording that you would do with him over the telephone. And anyhow, John, what he did is we thought we'd try it out. And so I kind of like exposed my all, I guess you would say, to him. And I don't even know what he has to say, but what I did is I talked to him for 10 minutes. He recorded it, and he's going to analyze me. Yours truly, Mary Sutherland. So you want to go with that and tell them more about what all happened and what we're going to do?
So we had a talk, and it's sort of a freewheeling discussion. I mean, I would say, we moved as the spirit moved us, I guess, as you say, you like to talk freely. Sometimes in a clinical setting, the talks, people are closer to a crisis issue, and they want to speak in a heated way about that point. But we had a casual conversation that did produce messages, and I had some samples of the conversation just so people could hear what the natural speech sounded like when we were talking on the phone.
You know what I thought about this morning? I'd done a show with Red Elk last night, and we were talking about, you know, everything is an illusion, and that if we wanted to get out of the illusion, we had to believe the fact that it was an illusion, that things just wasn't real. But I got to thinking about it, yeah, and I think that people have to focus on this reality in order to stay in it.
So that's just a sample, and of course we talked for several minutes, but just to give listeners an idea that Mary's voice is what I was recording, just in a casual conversation, and then I began to listen to it in reverse because I thought I'd be able to detect some extra messages hidden in the mirror of her voice, and in fact there are messages hidden backwards in her voice, and Mary, I wanted to share a couple of these with you tonight. I have a few.
And remember, listeners, I'm hearing this for the first time right along with you, so I have no idea what John's going to tell me.
I mean, Mary, you have heard people play reverse speech messages, backwards messages before.
Yeah, I have. On several different times I have, but not like what you're doing right now.
So maybe with a different intention. I mean, I don't know how therapeutic you'll find any of this material, but I'm sure you'll find it curious. There's a mixture of material in here, a variety of interesting material in here. So the first one, the words I heard were, spirits of dogs, they'll lick you.
Spirits of dogs,
yeah. I don't know if you can hear that one. Is that clear, Mary?
Spirits of dogs will lick you?
Yeah, like that.
Huh.
Now, I don't know if that was very easy to hear or...
Well, I could hear it, but I couldn't quite make it out. Of course, I don't have that ear. That's why I don't do the EVP.
If I asked you a question about this idea that, you know, on all of your investigations, you're out so often out in the bush, do you ever have a sense that there are, like, you feel like there's animals around that, you know, you're having some kind of contact with animals, although they may not be physical?
Well, you know, it's kind of curious because of the fact that, you know, I've been... writing, I've been working on my second book on the mound builders, and the mound builders of Ascalon. This is where there is a lake, or they found a pyramid at the bottom of the lake in over by Lake Mills. It's not very far from me, but lo and behold, the people that I'm researching were from the Canary Islands. Okay, they were the ones that had built the pyramid, and found out that these people, and of course everyone knows my interest in the mound builders. Well, the people of the Canary Islands, a lot of people thought that they were named Canary because of the fact of the little yellow bird, right? But it's an old Greek word. The root of it is the can, C-A-N, for canary. It means dog. That's where canite comes from, you know, the canites and canary. And they were, and so when the Romans went over there and saw them, they gave them the name People of the Dog. Oh. And it seems that all these mound builders they actually worshipped, you know, the dog.
Oh.
The canine, you know, and it goes all the way back, all the way back to the old Egyptian days. Anubis, I think
Anubis.
It was. Yeah. Remember, he had the head of the dog, the god with the head of the dog? Yeah. So, yeah, that's really, to me, it really is fascinating, because that's just where my mind has been, is on this ancient race that worshiped dogs. And, of course, this ancient race would now be spirits, so they would be a spirit of the dog.
Can I ask you, is it possible that people were performing dog sacrifices on?
They were. And as a matter of fact, even in the ancient Egyptian time, I can't remember the name of the city, but there was a city called it translates to Dog City, and they used to find sacrifices, you know, dog sacrifices. The ones here at Ascalon, they found a lot of sacrifices to the dog sacrifices. The Native Americans actually picked it up too, and they did dog sacrifices to they called it the god of the lake, the spirit of the lake.
It's a very interesting this thread that you've detected, though, as you say, from ancient Egypt to the mound builders. There was some kind of ritual worship involving dogs, or dog sacrifice, dog worship, associated with having a pyramid or mound.
Yeah.
The dog.
Yeah. And you've actually picked that up. And folks, trust me, I this book isn't out yet, and John would have known when we've never discussed this. As a matter of fact, I've just kind of been focusing on this by myself, really. And
I'll tell you a funny anecdote. Was that several years ago, there was a paranormal radio broadcast out of Alaska, and I interviewed with them a couple of times, and on one occasion a co-host was an author, and the author gave a very droll description of their book, you know, very dry, very difficult. It would be very difficult to guess what the book was about, and the backwards message described, but you didn't have one of the words in the title in it. So it's not the first time, Mary, that an author has disclosed their project backwards. But I'm very surprised that the message. Well, I'm grateful too that the message has personal significance for you. You can recognize the symbols right away.
And again, for the readers, what did it say? Or for the listeners?
Our first message. The word said, "Spirits of dogs, they'll lick you." And I'll play the clip for you again. For some reason, I thought that would be significant, so I noted it, and here we are, right into some interesting material right away on our first message. So
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed.
Now, I have some more messages, and I think you'll find that we weave back into some of the themes you've already started to talk about with some of the future messages, but here's a different sort of message. And the words I hear are, "A nice win," and the words, "blowing at the money." A nice win, blowing at the money.
A nice win, blowing at the money. A nice
Yeah, I heard that one.
The sound of the word win, and it's very close to the word wind.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, interesting imagery, wind blowing, and money, and something fortunate, something nice, and win also implying, you know, victory and struggle.
Yeah.
So people blow on dice, and I thought when I saw that, I thought, oh, maybe, you know, maybe he's a bit of a gambler, a risk taker.
Well, definitely a risk taker. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing the work we're doing, huh? We kind of put our name out there, you know, and so yeah.
So when we think about those words, anything in there, is there anything, a situation that, you know, start talking about your book? Are there other projects or?
Well, I think that I'm striving for success with my radio show and for my paranormal center and my books. I think, you know, I definitely am going for, you know, the golden ring on this.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So you in your vision, you are getting things, the UFO Reporting Center, the radio show, as big as possible, you reach the most people possible.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you're going right to the top.
And oh, you betcha.
So here, this sort of energy in that, this idea of blowing, and the energy in the air, and people talk in yoga, people talk about prana, and you know, receiving energy, and qigong, they talk about qi and absorbing and giving qi, and so the energy and money and victory, and I guess if I simplified the message, I could say that, you know, blowing at the money might imply hard work, you know, and the nice win is the result of a lot of hard work produces a nice result.
Yeah.
So I see that. So there's lots of, there's a fire burning there, and you know, it's a good image. It's a success image. It's an image of success.
Good.
So I like that image for you. All right. Continuing ahead, and now back sort of into some of the themes that we had from earlier. And this message, I heard the words, "The book does look away." Then the words, "My eagle." The book does look away, my eagle.
Okay.
So there's the word book, which was relevant for you. As you say, you're working on a second book now.
Mm-hmm.
And then looking away is an interesting idea. Did it mean when I thought about this message? Did it mean it was somehow a book that takes a different look, a different angle or perspective? Looking away.
Well, I'm basically rewriting history, because everyone, you know, here in the United States. Well, not everyone, but a majority of the people here in the United States don't even know about this ancient race and them being astronomers, astronomer priests. And their high technology, and so yeah, I'm definitely, this book is definitely going to change the attitudes of a lot of people.
As you say, so the vision that you convey through the book, in other words, is really
having people see things differently.
It's, yeah, and I guess possibly when I think about this idea that you're describing, and I'm sure I'll enjoy reading this in your book, is about the ideas, the philosophy of life and the way of life of those people, you know, and what could we learn as a society from them.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, it's our history, and I mean, until we learn our true history, we'll never know ourselves.
I like that. What, the word eagle came at the end, and an eagle soars and has a vision from afar.
Well, and also eagle represents the United States, and I'm talking about the history of the United States of North America.
Well, there you go, my eagle.
Yeah.
So America is my eagle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a book about America that makes the eagle, and you know, it's making the eagle turn its head, or there's a very visual sense here, anyways, about this book. I wonder what you're going to have on the cover. Hint, an eagle. But nonetheless, we're back into this theme or trend that emerged initially. You know, the dog and the spirituality, and that being part of the discussion in the book. and this idea about how on an unconscious level, the book, you know, in a dream, how we might encounter that book is something that makes us, the book is facing a different direction, or we face a different direction when we look in the book. We see things from a different perspective. We learn about my ego, or the ego, so the country is the ego, my America.
And of course, truth frees the spirit, right? And and that's what the ego does, is it frees the spirit to fly. No longer is it earthbound.
Mm-hmm. So as you say, so that the liberating effect of, you know, having that the greater vision.
Oh yeah, because these people were amazing, and these were our ancestors, and they had, they were, you know, it was like what Christ had said, if we only had the faith of a mustard seed, we'd be able to perform the same miracles as he did, and basically that's who these people were. They were able to perform these miracles. They were able to fly, you know. They wasn't limited to what, you know, our this history that has been given to the people. You know, it limits them, it binds them. Where this one, it just kind of more or less, these people, they believe that whatever your mind was capable of, you were too.
You certainly have a lot of information about these people. How many years have you been doing this research that will go into this book?
Oh, jeepers. Well, I always, excuse me, what I'm thinking is going on is I probably lived this life once before in another life experience. And I think what's happened is now that I chose to come back during this lifetime, I think what it is one of the things I was to do is bring back the, I've always believed that name is power, and if you take away the name of a person, you take away their power, you take away their history, you know, you weaken them. And so what I feel that I am is I'm back trying to give these people back their name and let people know who they were, and thus by doing so, not only am I going to be able to help the people, you know, to get their history back, but it also gives them back their identity, the ancient ones. Because in Genesis, it's mentioned once, during the time of the flood, you know, it talks about the men of old, the ancient ones, and these were these people. And so what I'm just trying to do is, I think that's what I am, is I'm back here to give them back their identity, thus give them back their power. And who knows, somehow I kind of suspect that these UFOs that I see above Burlington, I feel that somehow this is connected to those people. It could have been an ancient race that used to be here in the United States, or, you know, here in this world, that before, prior to the cataclysm, you know, going back to even Noah's flood, they may have left, and now they're coming back. It could be the Nephilim. I don't know, you know, but I feel a great connection to them.
Are there evidences to suggest that the mound builders had visitations with the UFOs?
Yeah, there is. As a matter of fact, people can go to my website. What would it be? There's a lot of information on it by just going burlingtonnews.net/ red-haired race. And it goes back to the fisher. Have you ever heard the legend of the fisherman, or the kingfisher?
I may have, you have to remind me. What was the theme of that?
Well, the kingfisher was taught, and the Indians used to have a story too. It seemed like every place you went, you heard of this this Caucasian race with red hair, and with a promise, or the people left with a promise that they would return. You know, we even have that in the story of Christ. You know, and then the Mayans have that tradition. It's just all over. And the story of the kingfisher was basically of a white. Of a white man, and he had these. He was like a son of a god, and he walked on water, and then he left with the promise of to return. And he had red, what was it, flame was his hair, which would represent red. Green was his eyes, and hooked was his nose. And hooked nose, I kind of, I feel that the hooked nose represents the Israelite. Mm-hmm. Or ancient Egyptian, you know. Some sort of a branch that the Israelites came from. And, you know, these same people, I highly suspect, were the ones that Sitchin talked about, and he referred to them as the Anunnaki.
Mm-hmm. But as you say, you find that they were terrestrial, that they were here like us, and that they found some way to get off the planet.
Well, I think originally what happened was we had visitors. And then from these visitors, the Anunnaki, they somehow they were able to create another race, you know, a hybrid race, and we call them, they were called the Shepherd Kings, or and these people, they were the beginning of the pharaohs that you hear about, but the legend stands. If you go into Egyptian history, you find out that where the legend stands is that there was a race that came across the sea from the west, and they were the makers of the pharaohs. And this goes back to you've heard of Thoth, T-H-O-T-H. Anyhow, he was one of these. He was one of these people. You know, and it seemed like there was this great race, or, you know, these people that they just went around the whole world, you know, and re-taught the people. They could have been the ancient Atlanteans. The Atlanteans would have came from the Lemurians. And so I think that these mound builders were probably the first mound builders, the original ones, were probably the ancient Lemurians. And that's what we have here. And if the ancient Lemurians could have been the ones that introduced the dog religion too, because in the ancient traditions it talks about this goddess that introduced the dingo to Australia, and the same, and she was had the capabilities of flying, and she flew around the world giving them the law as well as the dog. And here in North America, the dingo became the South Carolina wild dog, and from there came our dog. You know, our dog religions.
Well,
worshiping.
That is some far stuff. I have a couple more messages for you, and they have other animals in them too.
Okay.
So maybe you can enlighten me what some of these things. Here's one more for you, Mary. It said the words, "Wise owl, I stab you."
Wise owl, I stab you. Wise owl, I stab you.
Hmm. Well, now, we all know what wise owl is.
Yeah.
But to stab him, would that be a blood sacrifice?
Well, in light of our earlier discussion about animal sacrifices, it is an interesting question. Now, when I first saw it, I wondered if it implied an unconscious image of struggle. You know, the owl, the bird, the visionary, And the stabbing image as if there was some kind of struggle, you know, associated with that wisdom, as if
that even makes more sense. Yeah.
Well, what would your interpretation of that be?
Well, that does make more sense. The wise owl, I stab you, would be to stop the wisdom, but I can't see me stopping the wisdom.
No, but what about struggle involving wisdom?
Oh, this is a great struggle trying to find this information to get out to the people about these ancient ones. And this is something that there was an elitist group that went to a lot of trouble to cover up.
Why is that?
Well, the Smithsonian was involved in the great cover-up. The Vatican was involved in the great cover-up. It seems like there was some sort of a religious warfare, possibly going back all the way to the god and goddess worships. When they destroyed the goddess worship and replaced it with a patriarch. And by thus doing so, they would have had to destroy everything, all this history, so that nobody would ever know about the goddess.
So you're saying like hundreds or thousands of years of suppression involved in this kind of stuff?
Sure. Well, whenever the patriarch system started,
mm-hmm.
you know, which would probably been the Lemurian, they actually were nature worshippers, and they worshipped god and goddess. Then it went, I think, but it was more prone to goddess. And then when the Atlanteans took over, they introduced the patriarch societies and the religions. So it would go all the way back to there that the cover up started.
Yeah. While we're talking, something came to mind I want to speak to you about or ask you about, which were some of the photos on your site.
Uh-huh.
I know I'm just digressing again, but...
Okay.
You have the pictures that you and I have been talking about for some time now, which are the temple or pyramid shape that appeared over the... that very clear one that you have, or a series of images?
Oh, yeah. The ones that appeared over Mormon Road.
And some or not all of them, there's like a tongue of flame, like a golden plasma shape or something like that.
Yeah.
Seems to be coming from that temple or pyramid shape.
Yeah.
And there's another photo on your site, I believe it's your husband, and this fellow with the golden flame coming out of his forehead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the lightning bolt, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting, this idea that, when I think about some of the yoga symbolism of the third eye and the eye on the pyramid and the flame coming from that pyramid in your photo is very suggestive to me, the analogy of the light coming from the third eye. It is your husband, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's what I thought too, that it was connected, because that's exactly where that streak of lightning is going, or that streak of energy is going, is directly into, it's either coming out of his third eye or it's going in.
But there's a relationship between that place, that location of the body, and it seems to me that the color of the light and the qualities, at least the way the photo recorded of the light in the temple, seems to be the same kind of light.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was a very interesting comparison. I'm sure you had already thought of it, but I wanted to speak to you on that point, because you have so many, thought-provoking photos on your site. So when I see them, even though I've been looking at those for probably a few months now,
yeah.
on and off, it just came to mind. And
listeners, by the way, John and I, we pretty much we work together in an offhanded way, because I mean we're connected through our pictures, because his photos and my photos are somehow connected. We can't figure it out, but sometimes we actually get duplicate photos. There's a picture that I'd like for you guys to go to at yourinnervoice.com, and you'll see it in it, and it looks like a crown. And what's so, when I first saw it, when was it, a couple weeks back or so, I looked at it and says, oh my God, because I had taken one exactly like that right here in Burlington. And John is in Canada and I'm in Burlington, and some of these pictures are, you would swear, the same picture. So it seems like whoever this is, or whatever it is trying to get a message across, John's as much part of it as I am, so we kind of shoot pictures back and forth and try to figure out what the heck we got, because it's basically we're pioneering a field that really hasn't been touched by most people, and there's no explanations really except for what John and me come up with, so. But I'm sorry to interrupt you, John, but I just...
We're discovering new information, but as you say, the more sensors we can put out, it's just like a radio antenna array. The wider the array, the greater the spectrum of signals we can collect. And so we're out, we're astute people. We recognize something's going on, and if I'm there, recording, you know, maybe I'll be able to capture some of it. And, we're capturing some big signals, you know, from different parts of the world. So that is, it shows how open the field is to people who want to put in the effort, you know, to try to collect some images, because the signals sure are coming through. And certainly on Mary's gallery, there's so many different kinds of lights, including that one that we both have in common.
So before we go
on about photographs, I have one more message for you.
Okay.
You see how I digress and then I come back?
That's okay. I do too. It's just like, listeners, hold on. But it's more fun that way. Keep sharing your toes.
So we were listening to Mary's backwards messages, and there was one more message, and then we should talk a little bit about your observations about what this procedure was like for you as well.
While
we're doing this. Okay, so one more message for you, Mary, and the words I heard were, this is in your voice backwards, the words I heard were, is profit our shadow?
Is profit our shadow? Is profit our shadow?
Well, now that really came across clear, didn't it?
Yeah, the words are well expressed, and the word profit, of course, has, you know, two interpretations. It could be a prophet. We talked about money a little bit, but a prophet is also in the light of prophecy.
Yeah, and I have a feeling it's the latter.
And when I thought about you, I thought, you know, this idea about, you know, is maybe Mary is making predictions already, or maybe there's a part of her that's going to become more strongly expressed that has to do with talking about future events.
Well, it's been, I've had a few psychics tell me that I'm coming into my own now, and soon something's going to happen where I'll be able to actually prophesize. Who knows? You know, but I mean, I've had that, Sir Clifford actually told me that he felt that I'm a master, that I don't know it yet. It hasn't, you know, fully, you know, it's from all my previous life experiences that I've always had that. And it's just that now I'm finally starting to get it again, you know. And he says he sees that soon, you know, all this information is going to come, you know, and it'll come all at once. So if that's the case, then yeah, I suppose I could prophesize. But I think basically with me, you know, it's because of the fact that I study Earth cycles so much, and cycles of the ages, you know, and I've always felt that things keep repeating themselves over and over. So who knows?
But that's something you've been interested in. So I could say, it's fair to say that a couple of the words in the messages we got today were relevant, and were references to ideas that you had already, you know, you recognized this as something to do with you. Is that true? You found yourself reflected in some of the messages.
Oh yeah, definitely, very much so. And it just, it totally amazes me what you can do with this. I knew about reverse speech, but I did not know that you could actually use it for therapy.
Well, this is.
But I mean, of course, naturally, it makes sense when you think about it.
Well, there's several different layers to this idea that, you know, what could be the therapeutic application, or why would there be a therapeutic, a perceived therapeutic benefit or effect? And one is just this idea that we're communicating with the unconscious, which is, you know, has to do with integration and healing and resolving issues that may bother us on an unconscious level. But what I find sort of an area that's less discussed in this field is takes us back to these ideas about sound and the effects of sound, not only in the environment, but the effects on the body and the mind and the consciousness and how we feel and our energy. And these are sounds we're listening to and concentrating on, little sound waves. Those sound vibrations are influencing us. I think that they're producing a kind of sonic acupressure that has effects on the meridians of our mind and body that influence our consciousness. We feel, in other words, we can access repressed memories through hearing the messages, or repressed emotions. People can feel and release those feelings.
It's like when they say, is the inner child trained to get out? Would it be like that?
Sure.
You know, like how people, you know, like, you know, go, you know, going with the more of the field of psychology, it would be, you know, like how the psychiatrist will say, you know, that you have an adult, you have the child in you, you have the, what is it, the parent. And most of us, you know, we put out that adult, but there's also that inner child, and sometimes that inner child until you can cure the inner child, you know, you can't be whole. The purpose of it is to be totally balanced.
Right, so this idea of an inner family is sort of, you know, sort of a spiritual concept that sounds also religion, a holy family.
Yeah, the Trinity.
So this, you know, in light of Eastern philosophy, that inner divinity, the playful child would be, you know, the divine child inside of us who wants to express. So
yeah.
That energy, releasing that energy in Asian medicine is a question of moving the chi or the kundalini through the meridian. And in those fields, traditional practices, people understand that the power of the human voice can promote that. This idea that the sonic vibrations themselves have an influential effect on the stimulation, the awakening, and the movement of the inner child that can be perceived by the experiencer. It's this idea of sound therapy, but that there's sound therapy in our own voices. It's our own voices are. To contain medicine, so to speak, for us to heal, to help us heal ourselves, if we knew how to utilize it.
So, okay.
I'm sorry, Mary. Go ahead.
So, for my listeners and for help me understand, we have two consciousnesses to us: the regular consciousness and then the subconsciousness. And the regular consciousness is the one that we are aware of, and this would be acknowledged through our regular voice. But the subconscious, even though we're speaking, the subconscious is also putting things out. And how we pick up what the subconscious is trying to tell us is through the taping the voice and then playing it backwards. And through when you're playing it backwards, that's when you hear the subconscious come out. Am I correct?
Yes, it is. But the simplest analogy I can think of is the concept of a mirror.
Uh-huh.
Because which is applicable here directly, because, you know, when I use a computer workstation to analyze the voice, what I see visually is an oscilloscope waveform. And reversing the recording means mirroring the waveform. So I'm subjecting it to a mirror process. So I'm looking in, you know, metaphorically, I'm looking into the mirror. And in the Lewis Carroll world of Alice and the Looking Glass, when we look through the looking glass, we see the world of the unconscious.
Uh-huh.
And so that the mirror of time is the mirror of the mind, and we can face the unconscious through that mirror. So this reversing the speech signal is subjecting an event to the mirror of time, and when we look through that mirror, we perceive the contents of the unconscious. And that's the archetypal, you know, simplest archetypal metaphor of what's going on. You know, people scry events by looking into crystal balls or looking into mirrors. You know, looking into mirrors is a very old practice. The Sleeping Beauty and the Wicked Queen, I think in that story, had a magic mirror. A magic mirror is a mirror of the mind.
Right.
It's a very old symbol. So we're just exercising a very primal kind of a practice in this sense. You know, people can scry or, in other words, see the future. Nostradamus stared into a pool of water.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, is a pool of water.
So there's a very, very, very old metaphor. It's all, what's, you know, it's a modern high-tech approach to the same old thing. We're looking into the mind through the mirror of time. The magic mirror is the mirror of time, which is the mirror of the mind. The mind itself, from an Asian perspective, is a mirror. It's a mirror of higher consciousness, of the cosmic consciousness, the, you know, perfect mind. It mirrors the, you know, the absolute, you know, perfection of the universe. So the mind has this mirroring quality, and when we still the mind, when we listen, we must become very still so we can hear. If you go to a symphony or, you know, a classical performance of any kind of fine art, people generally are kind of quiet in the audience, you know?
Yeah.
They're concentrated, and so this listening is, you know, it's found in meditation practices. People listen for the cosmic sound, and when they hear the cosmic sound, they say they feel liberation. You know, they feel that their energy, their inner child awakens and is a state of ecstasy. So this idea about sound is very, very archaic, knowledge, and we're accessing, we're awakening properties within us through this archaic practice, in a sense. We're accessing the archaic, where people say that they feel that they access very, very deep core primal issues through these messages and that it's very empowering and helpful for them, because that when they resolve issues on those levels, they feel corrected or recalibrated to their own natural healthy state. They say that it's transformational for them. So this is the kind of study, you know, this kind of study interests me greatly, because I'm someone interested in consciousness studies and interested in sound. And it's remarkable that this there's keys to this kind of ancient knowledge in the human voice of every one of us. That, you know, we can utilize those keys to open these gateways and have these visions in the mirror of our own minds. This is entirely accessible to all of us. So I've pursued this with quite a lot of zeal and used it not only with individual counseling, but to learn about the world and study the news and produce alternative information, and it's been pretty interesting.
Okay, now for the listeners, these sessions, they can help you because you had success with focusing on sexual abuse, depression, sleep
disorder. People with unresolved traumas.
Yeah.
Unresolved trauma and the residue of those unresolved traumas is very difficult. Some of these scenarios that people in that happen daily in communities all over the world. They're painful scenarios that there's no, people feel isolated.
Uh-huh.
And they may feel shamed. And so people are sort of become double victims. You know, in some countries, for example, where women are raped, they're ostracized even by their own families, and most women will commit suicide. Well, that's just not, what the outcome we're looking for is, where people can feel that part of the self that feels the kind of isolation and pain can find release from that pain. You know, when we spend time getting closer and closer to pain, and I know, Mary, you've done counseling, so you've been in, this scenario with people. We get closer and closer. You know, what I observe is that people are experience attachment to that condition. In other words, a repressed trauma, some injury we felt from maybe 20, 30 years ago, we're holding on to it because in the shock of trauma, we may become intensely identified with being in that state, being a victim, being in pain.
Yeah.
And so when we have a chance to encounter that part of the self that has a deep attachment to that scenario, and give some validation and some honor to that part of the self, we see it very quickly that we're very willing and ready to let go and release that pain. And people have cathartic experiences. They have intense releases of emotion when that happens. It's a very liberating thing to feel relaxed enough to let go of the pain of the past. And so the messages can speak directly to those traumatic feelings, or those traumatized feelings, the inner person who feels traumatized. People talk in the voice of the child. Sometimes the grammar of the messages is very childlike, suggesting that it's the child themselves speaking to us and wanting to reconnect with the inner adult. And so when people are healing childhood level issues, sometimes that's part of the process. Once we've listened to the messages and talked about our observations, but we use them as the foundation for visualizations. But people I ask people to use their own sense and their feeling sense, their ability to use their mind's eye, their inner feeling sense and their inner listening sense, to communicate with the imagery that the messages evoke for them. And it's not uncommon in sessions where people may feel they're connecting with a part of themselves that's still represented as a child, for them to embrace the child as the good adult, the good parent, for example,
mm-hmm.
and to reintegrate. And people say these are very profound and meaningful experiences for them. These are not, these are experiences people may, for example, may have not encountered very often in their upbringing or family life. May not people who have been unable to connect emotionally with others, for example, due to feelings of pain, to have those kinds of opportunities can be very liberating and give people the confidence to pursue healthy relationships, nurturing situations in their lives, and create those kinds of nurturing situations to help other people. So I see it as kind of a social, it's a kind of a social work, one person at a time. If you can work successfully to help that person to feel empowered and to regain their confidence and strength, that person has the potential to create great change with all of the people in their lives. And so I've done a lot of one-to-one work and had a lot of had a lot of learning to do through that, but also I've refined my methods and produced a lot of really good data, I think, that has helped a lot of people
And you can help them with like sexual abuse, depression, sleep disorders, eating disorders, substance abuse, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, spiritual crisis, relationship issues, career issues, financial issues, and even the Kundalini awakening.
So even those exotic spiritual seekers as well. But all the kind of everyday problems that people face, you know, they were truly, to me, they are reflections of our inner state. So that back to this mirror metaphor, you know.
Well, I have noticed, you know, in my counseling, a lot of times what will happen, and this is, even includes, I've noticed, I've dealt with whole towns that this has actually happened to, like, for example, Carbondale, Pennsylvania, they had a UFO that crashed there in their silt pond. The whole town witnessed it, you know. They watched the military come in, load everything up, you know. And then afterwards, it was just like, you know, what they did is they suffered a trauma, and they went in, and I noticed that each one of them had like a slightly varied story of what happened, and some people were in total denial, and it said that it never even happened at all, and actually got angry over it. And I realized then that it could happen on an individual basis, or a mass basis, you know, of for instance, a whole town, where if amnesia and just like totally blank it out, like it never happened. So if a person has on an individual basis, if you've had like abuse as a child, it could have been so traumatic that you blanked it totally out in your mind. So you're talking normal, and then all of a sudden you have this reverse speech analysis done. And John's listening, and all of a sudden he's hearing that child screaming, you know. And so, you know, you're actually, so the child or the person that's experienced the trauma or the trauma itself can actually be picked up, from what I understand, through the reverse speech.
That's right. That we may be able to evoke that inner person who is still feeling that feeling of pain, that they may communicate with us directly, and that will give us an opportunity to encounter and resolve those feelings.
I think that's the biggest factor is, you know, in the process of healing, is first of all, you have to know that you have a problem. And nine times out of ten, well, I don't even know if it's nine times out of ten, it could even be more, but the thing is that most people don't even know that they got a problem. Because they're traumatized, so it's just blanked out, and so thus, when doing the reverse speech, all of a sudden, boom, there it is. So you acknowledge the problem. Once you acknowledge the problem, then you can turn around and work with for a cure for it, right?
And this is the thing, that fragment of the personality, you know, that fractured component of the self has energy. And if we can successfully reintegrate with that part of the self, we add, you know, we gain the energy and momentum that otherwise is inaccessible to us. So it's not uncommon that when people are in crises, they feel that they need to accumulate energy to do some difficult thing that's coming up, you know.
Yeah.
That this kind of reintegrative process is what's helpful. Any part of the self that's stuck, you know, any energy that's moving, you know, somewhere in the past needs to be brought up to the present and reintegrated now. That creativity, you know, that part, components of the mind, those synaptic, networks that are inaccessible need to be reaccessed and reintegrated into the larger system to make, you know, to create a higher performing individual. And that's within our grasp. You know, these kind of results excite me, and I see them, and I believe in them, and I believe that people, you know, want to feel that empowered and want to be able to make transformational changes for the better in their lives and for the people that they love.
Well, it seems to me from, you know, for the how you analyzed mine, it seems that I'm pretty much connected with my subconscious.
You are accessing and channeling the energies of your unconscious mind directly through your work. There doesn't seem to be a disconnect there. You are on your path. Your unconscious is supporting you to continue. And, you know, the visions of empowerment and knowledge. You know, there's discussions about the nature of the path is about difficulty. but this positive, you know, positive imagery there, it seems really well aligned. If I was, you know, if you came to me and said, you know, should I change careers? I'd say, wow, you know, I got a book going here, this wisdom, vision, and prophecy, and yeah, all these things are all on the money. So yeah, you are on your path. You are authentic. You know, you are authentic to your unconscious mind. When we look at you through the mirror of the mind, you know, we see the authentic self, and that authentic self is well reflected in you.
Good, that sounds great. Now, listeners, I highly recommend for you to go to yourinnervoice.com and learn more about this, because John actually does do these sessions right over the phone. You can have a 5 minute sessions, you can have 10 minutes, 60, 90, 120, it's up to you how long, right? How you can actually order a session right through the phone, and John can help you. Am I correct in this?
Yeah, those sessions are available. Typically, people start with 60-minute sessions, which include a 10-minute analysis, or 10-minute interview and recording, a half an hour of analysis to produce the clips, examples of which we heard today from Mary's voice, and then time for discussion. In a longer session, there's more time to do the visionary work, where we utilize the messages to access major visions about the inner process and about healing. That people say are, you know, very powerful. That this, you know, the sound energy and the sound energy in our own voice is sort of medicine, so to speak, in our own voice. Very powerful stuff. If people want to experience it for themselves, sessions are fast and direct way. You heard today. I mean, Mary, you know, and I agree that we hadn't really this information that we. In other words, it was new information for me. Anything that I found in her voice, Mary was sharing with me things for the first time today that I hadn't talked with her about in the past. And this is the unconscious wants to speak. You know, the energy wants to move. The inner person wants to grow and express. And so, you know, we're the gatekeeper, and our voice is the key to unlocking that gateway. And the sessions provide a forum where that can happen, even by telephone. It's very, very intensely creative and empowering.
Let me give you an example, because I'm on John's website right now, yourinnervoice.com/consult, C-O-N-S-U-L-T. Now, here is an example of how this works for you, the listener, if you wanted to get one of these sessions. It says, in this session, the client approached John to talk about her golf game. She felt that she had lost some of her self-confidence and revealed that a difficult ending to an important relationship may have dampened her spirits. In the first part of the recording, you'll hear the segment of the interview where the client's unconscious disclosure takes place. The message, "I was molested," was found hidden backwards in this segment. John plays this message for his client, and you witness her response. The verification of her childhood molestation is nothing short of amazing. Now, apparently this woman wasn't, she didn't know about it?
That case is several years old. It was I think in her case, it was more than likely it was the relationship between, you know, the issues she came about, which were sports performance.
Uh-huh.
And these memories. Many, you know, what we find, it's not uncommon that folks who suffer this kind of trauma are intensely isolated, not only within the family, but even in our society. Sometimes it's highly stigmatized, you know, that even, you know, to talk about in polite company. So those folks feel very isolated, and it's not uncommon that I will, if I'm working with somebody who has this issue, that I may be the first person they ever had a chance to speak to about it, even people who are in their 40s or 60s. It's a highly stigmatized issue.
Well, it's never too late to help yourself. Now, and listeners, it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be something really serious, you know, like a molestation that could be holding you back. But as long as the child in you thinks it's serious and was traumatized, you know, it's going to cause a problem. And I want to use an example here that John does know about, but nobody really knows about, but I think I'm going to say it because it'll help people to understand. In my 30s, I used to have the Phoenician Publishing House, and my attorney used to, you know, because I get myself in all these sorts of troubles, and my attorney would turn around and say, Mary, I swear to God, you deliberately sabotage yourself. You know, it's just like when you seem to be getting right at so successful with something, you create something that causes problems for you. You know, and I just kind of laughed it off, you know, and he could be so frustrated, you know. And so anyhow, I was doing a story on past life regression, and these people, you know, the hypnotist says, well, if you're going to be doing the story, let me, you know, take you through the process so that you know firsthand. And through this, you know, we did a lot of different things, but one of the things was to go back and, you know, visit with the child within. And, you know, and I had, you know, laughingly told him about what the lawyer had told me, my attorney had told me about me deliberately sabotaging my success all the time. And so he took me back to my child through regressive hypnosis, and to find out that right prior to me going to, because see, I was very close with my parents, okay? And so right prior to me going to school for the first time, my folks wanted, they bought me this real pretty little purple bike, okay? But it had the training wheels on it. And so what had happened was, you know, my folks were out there and working with me and things like that, and then finally my dad got it to the point where he took the training wheels off, and I was successful riding that bike without the training wheels. Well, a week later I went to school. So somehow my child in me related my success of riding that bicycle to being taken away from my parents or being separated from them. And so what it did is it shut me down. I could turn around and get so far with anything until I felt that I was going to be successful. And then subconsciously, through my child, I was deliberately sabotaging. And my attorney was right. And so what I had to do is, once I realized I had a problem, then what we did is we worked with the child, you know, and I overcame it. But so you see, folks, it doesn't have to be anything big. It could be like with me and my training wheels on my bicycle. But as long as the child became traumatized, it was going to keep me from ever being successful. And thank God, I turned around and had done the regressive hypnosis. But you see, the same thing works with this, a reverse speech. Same thing, because it's the subconscious that comes out.
It's really talking to us, and as you said, you know, when people do this kind of insight work, you know, inner directed work, very powerful experience. I mean, it also takes a lot of courage. You know, people have to want a little bit to find out something, you know, something mysterious about themselves, maybe, you know, something unknown, and it takes a certain kind of adventurous spirit to want to have that kind of experience. But it's the highest sort of adventure, I think, because you know, if you can improve your performance, if you can become a better person, if you can feel better about yourself, then, you know, who knows, if your life can be so different, and so much, you know, the quality of life can certainly be much better for a lot of us if we're willing to look within, you know, to look into that mirror.
Exactly. And you know, even if you don't have a problem, like, you know, like with myself, when I had the session done with John, how nice it is for me now to know that my work is validated through myself. Because my subconscious now has told me that I'm on my path. So now I have no doubt that my work is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. So not only can you be healed of past problems, but it's also can be used to validate you today in what you're doing. So, I mean, you know, John, I'm telling you, I'm so impressed with, you know, I've known you for some time, and we've had you on our shows before, and we've always talked about our pictures that we're working on, our interdimensional photos, and and I guess, you know, I kind of like targeted in on that, and I tunnel visioned myself, and I wasn't looking at anything else, the rest of your work. And then all of a sudden I get over here, and I see this reverse speech, and it's just like I am just so impressed and so fascinated by your work. Well, and I want you, if you would please, this is the person I'm going to bring it up, and I guess I got to risk you saying no to me on the phone, but in front of all these listeners, but I would like for you to do a lot more shows with us, and not only talk about the interdimensional photos that you're working on, and that area of science, but also and I know my listeners really want to know more about this reverse speech, the work that you're doing in that, because I just think it's just this is such a new field that that people can have to get therapy, another alternative to being shot up with drugs and put into a straitjacket, face it, there's a lot of people that have gone they've gone for help, and instead of getting help they end up worse than ever.
There's a lot of pitfalls, precarious, even dangerous situations in modern medicine and healthcare and the pursuit of wellness. And so, yeah, this is utilizing archaic, designs in our minds and our bodies that have sensitivities to sound and strange mirrors of consciousness. But it's part of us. It's our own voices that are doing the work, and we can learn to use our own voice to help ourselves. And I think anyone would agree that that's a good thing. And so I encourage people, if they found this curiosity inspiring, to contact me to find out about those individual sessions. Of course, there's lots of samples of sound clips from my website. People can explore sounds from sessions as well as my news reporting. And, something, if you listen to this show to hear Mary's voice again. I mean, we didn't rehearse. We pre-recorded the interview so I could prepare the clips, but we didn't rehearse what happened next. All of this was done live, and I think we agree it was very authentic. So yes, Mary, it'd be an honor to continue to speak with you on these shows that you do, and be part of the whole research experience that you're bringing to everybody through your website and your radio programs. So I'd be pleased to come back again and talk to you.
Okay, great. And John, now you're at yourinnervoice.com, but these people that want to get a hold of you for a session, do they call you, or do you want them to email you, or go to your website, or how do you want to do this?
I'll give out a couple of points of contact. There's the website, which has information, and there is my toll-free number for people who want to call in North America-wide. It's 1-888-453-0751. That's 1-888-453-0751. And my email is john@yourinnervoice.com. And so contact me, let me know you're interested. I will get back to you with all the information that you'll need to be able to evaluate this opportunity further, and I hope that you'll commit to trying a session for yourself to see what happens, because I know that so many people have had really positive experiences. It's unlike many things that are out there. It's kind of a unique. Mary, you think it's kind of unique, isn't it? Have you experienced that?
I love it. I think it's the best thing since peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
It's
wonderful.
It's really, if you like high adventure and access to deep parts of consciousness and new energies and creativity, then this is something for you, and I hope that you will call.
Well, yeah, I think that's it. All of our listeners, that this is what we're into. We're not into, the norm. We want to have connection with the real reality. We want to have connection with spirit, with ourselves, with the universal life stream, with the magic, And I mean, this type of healing works for us, because it's holistic. You know, it's not drugs, and it's not condemnation. It's not trying to blame your parents for, you know, what happened to you or anything like that. It's simply coming in contact with your inner self and thus coming in contact with your higher self. You know, so, I mean, you know, for my listeners, for myself included, this is the way to go for evolving, you know, because I think that we're all looking, you know, to evolve on our path, you know.
Yeah.
We have to, you know.
That's right, we've got to move forward.
Yeah, yeah. So anyhow, we've got another guest coming on, and I want to thank you so much, John Kelly. And again, yourinnervoice.com. And I got some great pictures I have to show you later tonight or tomorrow. I've got to take another tour out tonight, so I probably won't be able to get with you. But boy, do I have some pictures for you.
I'll be looking forward to catching up with you then, absolutely.
Okay. You take care, John.
Thank you, Mary.
And thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And folks, we'll be right with you. I'm calling. Yeah, Bruce Adams?
Yes, speaking.
Yeah, hi, this is Mary Sullivan, BU Up All Radio, and you're on live. And listeners, we're going to be listening now to Bruce Adams, and he's going to be talking about his book, Prophet or Madman. And Bruce, welcome to our Saturday Night Paranormal show. So first of all, tell us about your book.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Mary.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
The book is it's the result of a direct revelation where God showed me creation and told me to write about it and to teach it.
And we've got, and for the listeners, we have a website, and I believe that is www.prophetormadman.com.
Correct.
Am I right on that?
You're absolutely right, yes. And it's prophet, of course, is spelled P-R-O-T-H-E-T. I probably would spell it the other way, but...
P-R-O-P-H-E-T-O-R-M-A-D-M-A-N, which is prophet or madman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
I'm sorry.
So, tell us a little bit more about the book, please. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you before,
but okay.
I wanted to make sure that the people were able to pull up your site. I like to have them listen or look at your site, you know, and while they're listening to you talk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so go on.
Well, as I say, it was the result of a direct revelation, kind of turned my life upside down. I was not actively seeking spiritual answers. I was caught up in everyday life like most people. I was a businessman. I had a 9-year-old son at the time, and house on the water, boat in the backyard, the full American dream I was living.
Mm-hmm.
I've been self-employed since I was 18 years old. I had several different businesses, 5 businesses in the past. I was gearing my life up for a life of luxurious retirement, and the week before I was ready to launch a company that I was working on for a year and a half, out of the clear blue, I heard a voice come to me, and this voice was unlike anything I had experienced in the past. Where first of all, I went to a state of deafness for a moment. Systematically, it just came that everything went dead still. I mean, I was surrounded by people. I was ice skating with my son, and music just stopped, and people's voices seemed to just get cut off. I could see them talking. I knew that everything else was around me was still normal, but all of a sudden I was deaf. And then this voice appeared and kind of gave me some instructions what to do with my life.
So what happened was, it was like you stepped into like a void of some sort, and then you could it kind of like drowned out all the other, you know what I'm talking about, with a void.
Well,
you know, that there's just no sound.
Could be, yeah, that would be a good way to explain it. Yeah, it was almost as though.
Or could you hear the angelic? Was there like angelic music in there or any place? Because there's such a thing as called the sound of the Benai. Have you ever heard of it?
Never heard of it.
The Christians call it the sound of the angels, the song of the angels, something like that.
I have to say there was no music associated with it whatsoever.
Just the voice itself.
Just the voice. Uh-huh. And this voice gave me some instructions, some specific things to do. One of them was to stop meditating. Now, prior to this, I had no time in my life. Like most people, you know, caught up in this world, I hadn't even thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised Roman Catholic, and I was kind of a quasi-Christian. Used to go to Mass on rare occasions, Christmas, Easter, you know, the big ones. But most of the time I said, I really don't need to run off the church. I don't need this much in my life. I'm fine. I'm comfortable. And I wasn't searching for anything. I wasn't seeking anything. And that's why this was such a surprise.
Other words, you just got a good kick in the butt, huh?
Basically,
you're saying,
yeah.
Wake up.
I was told, wake up now. It's time for you to wake up. And I was told to stop meditating. Well, in my meditations, I was directed to write a spiritual book.
Uh-huh.
And I'm saying, first of all, my first response was, I can't write a book. I'm not trained to write, first of all. I hadn't studied theology. I didn't study religions. And I'm saying, how am I supposed to write a spiritual book? But I said, okay, I'm being told to do this. I should at least follow and see where this leads.
Uh-huh.
Well, a few months into meditating, I started off meditating 5 to 10 minutes at a time, not knowing what I'm doing. You know, I hadn't had any training on meditation. I didn't talk to anybody. I knew anyone who actually could develop you know, an understanding as to what's involved. I just kind of like haphazardly moved along here and felt my way through. But I started off 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and then before you know it, I was meditating 1, 2, 3 hours at a time.
Uh-huh.
And
wow, that's a long time to meditate.
It's a long time to meditate, but
do you find that when you meditate that there is no sense of time?
Absolutely. I mean, Einstein put it very nicely when he was talking about relativity. He says, put your hand on a hot stove, and it seems like an hour, or you know, sitting with a pretty girl for an hour seems like a minute. Time is a relative thing, and depending on how we view it.
Yeah, right? Based on the observer.
Absolutely. And, you know, I kind of learned this as I went along. But as I was meditating and preparing to write this book, I had an experience that made hearing a voice seem like nothing. I mean, everything I had experienced in this world seemed like nothing, because God took me, I don't know how to put this exactly, but God took me through all of the various dimensions and gave me an overview of the whole of creation and a general understanding of the whole system, and said, now.
Now, almost something like what Ezekiel went through?
Like who went through?
Ezekiel.
Tell you the truth, I'm not familiar with. As I say, I've done very little reading about, you know, what others have written.
Uh-huh.
But this is something that, you know, it was as though I was infused with an understanding of the whole system.
Uh-huh.
God said, write about this and teach this.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know where to begin. That was back in 96. And I spent literally 3 years meditating 2 to 3 hours every single day while I worked on that book.
Uh-huh.
And I finished the book, and it was called It's All One Truth. my own mother said to me, I can't make heads or tails out of what this is.
Well, so this isn't your first book.
No, well, no, this was to explain the first book.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I spent a year and a half trying to explain the book. I had various groups that I met with, and I tried to explain what I meant by various aspects in it. And what I came to realize was I had to rewrite it.
Uh-huh.
And so I used the what little background I had in the way of Christianity.
Uh-huh.
I knew the Bible was there. I mean, I had been exposed to certain scripture from my upbringing. But I also, after this experience, saw how much, how distorted things were from what I was presented to what now God had shown me. There was a huge void between those two levels of understanding.
Well, you got to consider, too, the Bible as a condensed history of tens of thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all trying to say something in one book, which is almost impossible. It kind of gives you a certain understanding, guidelines, and hopefully if you can come in contact with, you know, your higher self, your God or whatever, you know, you can take off from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. And I found, after this experience, I found that when I did read the book, this is the first time I read the Bible, was actually I didn't read the Bible in depth until after I wrote my first book.
Uh-huh.
And then I picked it up, and then I said, now, maybe I can use it to explain the book and explain this bigger picture. And that's what I did. This Prophet of Madman begins with using scripture and using the Bible. I very well could have picked up the Bhagavad Gita and used that, or some other teaching and used that. But I had been raised Christian, and I saw how much what they taught me stood in the way of my truly knowing God.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to address some of the misunderstandings, and that's what I did. I used scripture,
mm-hmm.
and that's the beginning of the book. The latter part of the book, I get into the metaphysical part of things,
mm-hmm.
once people had a foundation that they could build from.
Mm-hmm.
So this book basically covers our life here, and it covers the various dimensions, and it covers the interplay between all of the various dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
So, from soup to nuts, it's creation in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And
your book has, I've got the table of contents in front of me. Part one's Christ and Truth, interpreting the Bible in the beginning, the Christ. And then the part two is You and God, which is God, time and energy, consciousness, spiritual versus material, the soul, love, the ultimate treasure, judgment and karma, detachment, meditation, reality, and the common thread. Time and energy. I'm curious about that. What do you mean by time and energy?
Well, time and energy is when we're going through the various dimensions within creation, or are relative to this plane. Time and energy are interconnected. And when you focus energy on something, you are putting energy in motion, and that motion is also going to be linked with time. And time is going to, of course, be linked with that motion that you put in, that energy you put in the motion. You know, for example, if I believe in something, and I'm building my belief in that, well, I'm going to be experiencing that experience relative to the time that I'm focused on it. When I let it go, it's gone. And
mm-hmm.
now I've moved on to something else. And our experience within creation is pretty much like that. Most people now are starting to hear something about the eternal moment of now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being here now, and the power of now,
mm-hmm.
and focusing our consciousness on a more of an expanded view. But most people in this world have been kind of limited and lost. They're looking at things relative to the human perspective, and as long as they hold to that, they are going to be limited to this plane or this dimension of time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, time exists in certain realms, at different speeds and different rates. And I mean, we could go deeper and deeper, but we'd have to discuss the whole mechanics of creation. Would need a tremendous amount of shows to do that. But what I was getting at is time is linked to the energy that we set into motion. And like I say, depending on the various dimensions that you're looking at, you're going to see a different sense of time, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, people are going to experience different sense of time within this dimension.
Do you think that these dimensions are what the Bible refers to as heavens?
Well, yes, I think so. When you go into Genesis, for example, and that's one of the things I did do in the book, to give people a little bit of greater understanding. In Genesis, it says, these are the generations. And it doesn't say generations. These are the generations in the plural of the heavens and of the earth that were created in the day that God created the world. Now, that's the way it was phrased in Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And what that's referring to, of course, is the multidimensional aspect of creation and the various dimensions and the various heavens. Yes, there are various heavens. And later part of the Bible, Paul talked about various heavens. He said, I met a man some 14 years ago. Whether in the body, I do not know, but I do know he had attained the third heaven. Very interesting that he said, I know he had attained the third heaven as opposed to heaven, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he was making reference to various dimensions.
So I take that third heaven must be much higher than the one that we're in right now.
Well,
and of course, maybe when I say heaven, I should be going heaven/hell. Because maybe the life here in this third dimensional plane, the one that we call our reality, is our heaven or hell.
Mm-hmm.
Phase one. We cross over, go into another one.
Mm-hmm.
Phase over, go into another one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Third, fourth. And, you know, of course, we've always heard the reference to seventh heavens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jacob's ladder.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting that if you do read the Christian Bible, it says, fear not the man who can kill the body, but fear the man who can kill the body and leave you in hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what is that saying? It's saying that, yes, this is, for many, many people, this is hell.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, it's heaven.
Yeah, your own thoughts create your reality here.
Absolutely, and that's one of the most basic fundamental laws of creation, is that we have free will to go ahead and participate in manifesting our experiences.
I've come to realize that our thoughts of what our life is going to be like after we step out of this body is going to create that reality, you know, later. So what you think today of what the life is after death, that's going to be what it is. So if you live in darkness, you fear, you know, you have a lot of guilt, mm-hmm. self-condemnation, and you think that, oh my God, I'm going, you know, with all the things that I've done, I'm going to go to hell. Well, chances are you probably will, when you cross on over, you're probably going to be looking at a reality that is about as close to hell as you can make it here on this earth.
You know,
but if you think of you know, if you think through this life, you know that, you know, you create your life afterwards, and it's a place full of angels and laughter and, you know, family members, whatever the case may be. That's what you're going to see too.
One of the things that I wrote about, Mary, and I think it's very, very important for people to come to realize. A lot of what you just said I agree with, and some of it I disagree with, in so much as, now again, I'm going to go back to the Bible, because there is some truth that's in the Bible. I mean, you have to know where to find it, but there are some things.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about the law, and Paul said something that was very interesting. He says, by the law, I am free of the law. I am above the law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, until we come to realize and know ourselves, then what's happening is our thoughts are manifesting the experiences around us, and what we truly believe, is going to manifest our next experience. That's true. What I say, though, is people think they believe one thing, when in reality, they really are not consciously awake enough to recognize what they truly believe in. You know what I'm saying? The true belief of an individual is not necessarily what their personality self thinks they believe in.
It's the difference between believing and knowing.
Absolutely. It's a huge, huge difference. And most people in this world are deluded.
Mm-hmm.
The majority, and especially a lot of the Christians running around with their Bible in their hand, to me, are self-deluded. And they say they're creating, or they're going to run off to heaven. And this is one of the things that Christ was explicitly clear about when he said, in the end, they're going to come to me and say, didn't I teach in your name, prophesize in your name, heal in your name, cast out devils in your name, do all these wonderful works? And he said, I'm going to tell them, get away from me, I never knew you.
Mm-hmm.
Because people, like I say, they're self-deluded. They think they believe in something, or they could even believe in something. But the idea is, there is a greater reality, and there is a greater law. And what they say in this world is true beyond this world.
Mm-hmm.
Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Yeah.
And if you are ignorant of the law, and you are setting energy into motion, you are responsible for the energy you put into motion.
Mm-hmm.
There is no judge to judge you, but the energy that you are linked to
mm-hmm.
is going to manifest your experiences.
Yeah, it's very important. You know, people say, well, you know, I didn't commit murder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't physically commit. But the thing is, you don't need to physically do anything.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you think, you're just as guilty of that sin, because the thought itself creates. So you have to be very, very careful about what you think. And, you know, and a lot of people, they, you know, they'll turn around, you know, and they'll say, well, you know, they'll say, well, you know, you hear a lot of these tapes now on positive thinking, you know, your thoughts create. So they'll say, think your way to success. Well, you know, a person turns around and they have all these thoughts that they're going to be successful. They'll have a thought that they want a brand new home, right? And but then they don't get it, and they'll say, well, you know, I did all that positive thinking. Nothing happened. Or the Christian will say, well, you know, I had all that faith. You know, I prayed for, I prayed for, a good family life, but nothing, but it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't realize that what they usually do is they'll have two thoughts. One thought is, I want this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The second thought is, but.
Mm-hmm.
And that but is that seed of doubt. And that seed of doubt will cancel the first thought out. So it's not that these tapes don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that the belief in your prayer doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the prayer itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough faith in the process, because most people will finish it off with a but. But, you know, they'll say like something like, okay, well, I want a brand new home, or a new home. But and then they'll say, but, you know, I know this will probably take a few years because I don't have a good enough job. The kids are still in school, so I'm sure it'll come along at some point in time, but probably not now.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as they think that, guaranteed it won't come along.
Well, this is why Christ said when he was doing some of these healings that he was doing, and they went to him and oh, look at this great healing, and he said, you know, it was your faith that healed you.
It was
exactly
the belief. Yeah.
Without
the
belief, nothing can be done. Nothing can be healed.
Yeah.
And so exactly what you're saying is 100% true. It's people say one thing and then they nullify it the very next second.
Mm-hmm.
So what they've done is they've put conflicting energies out there. They put one energy and then they nullify it with another energy, and then what happens? They've got a conflict going on, and their life is up and down and sideways, and wondering, where'd this come from?
Yeah,
they created it.
Yeah, their thoughts are in conflict.
Mm-hmm. But also taking that to a higher level, if we look at things in this world, see, we have people looking at things from the ego personality self, the human
mm-hmm.
self.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, I want this, I want this, and I want this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they fail to realize is they are spiritual beings on a journey of unfoldment, and their spirit is saying, you want that, but as a spiritual being, you want this. As a human being, you want that. Now what happens is those energies many times don't kind of gel. We've got conflicting energies.
Well, I think it's those energies causes the confliction, which causes the cancellation, yeah.
Absolutely. And so until we get clear with who and what we are...
Well, Christ said you can't sit on both sides of the table.
Absolutely right.
So, I mean, you can have anything you want materialistically.
Mm-hmm.
You can have anything else you want or everything you want spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the two work together as one
mm-hmm.
when there's no confliction. But sometimes, you know, it doesn't. And that confliction will cause a conflicted life.
Well, they'll always work together when you take the personality out. When you take the attachment out, when you take the attachment from the human side out of the equation, now everything can work together, because now you're acting for the betterment of the whole as opposed to the personal self.
Right.
And this is what we've all really, whether people know it or not, this is what we've all come here to learn to do. I mean,
well, people come to me and they'll say, you know, I want all this stuff. You say I can have all this stuff, but I know I can't. I say, yeah, you can. Because you can have anything you want, but it doesn't guarantee how long you're going to have it. Like, I could turn around and look across the street to this great, big, beautiful mansion, okay, across the street, and I can say to myself, I want that house, and I'm going to have it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Now, it depends on what I'm willing to do
mm-hmm.
as, according to my moral character,
mm-hmm.
is if I'm going to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I have a corrupt moral character,
mm-hmm.
I guarantee you I can have that house tonight.
Absolutely.
I could go up there and I could turn around, kill that family, and be living in that house.
Absolutely.
Now, law comes along and turns around, and the law will turn around and arrest me for killing those people. But I made it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, result is, what is that, action and consequences.
Absolutely. Everything has a price.
Everything has a price. So what you have to do, yeah, so what you have to do is look, so you can have anything you want in this world. But it's like I said, it just depends on your moral character. And most of us have too high of standards in order to turn around, thank God, and make all of our wishes come true. But for those that do have a corrupt moral character, then of course we have human law that takes care of it. You know, so it balance. You know, life is balances and you know checks and checkpoints and counter checks and whatever.
Yeah, without human law, though, Mary. If we look at things from the higher perspective, energy will always seek its own balance.
Yeah.
Just like water. Water will always seek its own balance. And if you move something out of balance, rest assured, it's going to at some point come back into balance. And there is a price for everything that we do in creation.
Yeah.
And I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying. And the Bible basically says, Christ was saying, don't look to this world for your treasure. Look beyond this world.
Yeah.
You can look in this world, and you can have your treasure here. And that's one of the things that Christ was very clear on also when he said, listen, I'm going to teach you, I'm going to paraphrase it because it didn't use his exact words, but he said, I'm going to teach you the mechanics of creation, and I'm going to teach you how to save yourself. If you don't listen to me, I got some advice for you. Go back into the world and make friends, because you're going to need them.
Yeah.
No. There is a higher purpose for all of us being here, And there is a lower purpose for all of us being here. And we can do whatever we want. You can have whatever you want. I'm first to admit, if someone wants something bad enough, they can have it. For me personally, and I tell people this today, I don't really have an attachment to material things anymore. I don't have an attachment to money anymore.
Well, I think that's where spirituality comes in. But I've also found, a good point for spirituality is, materialistic people, they have to make it happen. I mean, with a capital M. A spiritual person finds out that they don't have to make anything happen. It just is taken care of for them.
They allow it to happen.
Yeah. They allow it to happen.
Mm-hmm. Big difference.
Yeah. They're no longer fighting. They're going with the flow, and because of it, all things are given to them.
And this is what Paul meant when he said, by the law I am free of the law. You know, when you lay down your life, so to speak, and this is what Christ was talking about, forsaking. He said, you want to follow me, you have to forsake your mother, your father, your husband, your wife, your children, even yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to forsake self in order to be my disciple. Now, most Christians don't understand that. Most people don't understand that. But when you do make that transition, when you lay down your ego, personality, self, it doesn't mean you don't live in this world anymore. It doesn't mean you don't function in this world anymore. It just means you participate on a more conscious level and you interact in creation as opposed to reacting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole different realm.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, when you do that, all of the karma that you would be creating that is going to hold you is severed. And no more karma is created as long as you maintain that level of consciousness and that level of detachment. When you do things for the betterment of the whole, when you have surrendered your ego life, in that moment now, you are a conscious player, and you are going to make the transition, and you are going to be free of all of the energies. Because it's not you.
Yeah.
It's not the you doing it. It's creation. It's the universe. It's God. It's whatever someone wants to call it. But you are interacting now. You're playing a whole different game. You're playing a different role. And that's really what all of the spiritual teachers have really come to teach man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Buddha was talking about pain and suffering in this world. And he said all pain and suffering that people experience is their resistance to life.
Yeah, yeah.
Life's
going to
go on.
Yeah. Yeah. And, life spelled backwards, evil. You know, so.
And, yeah, I was looking at my life, for example, and like I say, today I have no attachment to the material world. I have no attachment to money. I don't have anything. And somebody said to me, well, if that's true, how come you're selling your book?
Mm-hmm.
And I also would have to say this. Although I have no attachment to money, I don't have an aversion to money either.
Well, I mean, that's only common sense. I mean, you know, I mean, we do live in a world that we have to pay our bills. I mean, you know, there has been provisions given to us, you know, in order to make a living. And and if a person is writing a book, I mean, you know, this is a provision that's been given to them. You know, so why shouldn't they get paid for it? I mean, I fully expect to get paid for my work doing my radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And my books and everything else I do. I mean, you know, these people that turn around tell me or say, well, you know, yeah, well, if you're so spiritual, I mean, you know, why do you want money? Well, duh, you know. Hello. I'm human.
Well, at least you're having a human experience.
I'm having a human experience here called Monthly Bills.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But anyhow, all this is in your book.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not going to give away everything that's in your book, but we just wanted to let you people in on what's going on, and within the pages there. And the book is called Prophet or Madman. And we're speaking with Bruce Adams, and you can find the information that you need on it by going to prophetormadman.com. PROPHETORMADMAN. Prophet or Madman. And now, is the book out? Yeah.
The book is available online at any of the bookstores, so they could buy it directly from my website.
Okay. There's a link right there on his website where you can turn around and just click onto it, and it explains to you exactly how that you can purchase this book. And by the way, I want to thank you for sending me the book. It's a very good book, and I've enjoyed reading it, so thank you. And now we have it here in our library at our UFO and Paranormal Center. So it... for the people of the Burlington area, you can stop in, take a look at the book, read it, and if you like it, you just order it, and we can help you get the book right here as well. And anyhow, you're listening to BUFO Paranormal and UFO Radio, BurlingtonNews.net, and the show is running live tonight, and will be running live for the next week. After that, it'll go into our membership on demand site, and there you'll be able to listen to the show. We've got 3 years worth of shows on it, and this show will be up there permanently. So whether it be now, next year, or 3 years from now, 5 years from now, you'll be able to listen to this show as long as you are a member. And that is how we pay for these radio shows. So what we ask you to do is get a membership by going to burlingtonnews.net/membership. And you go onto that page, and it explains everything. You get right now, membership is $20 a year, so you definitely get your money's worth. And so remember, this week you'll be able to listen to this show at our live stream where you're listening to it now. Following week, then you'll be able to start listening to it on our on-demand site. So we want to thank you very much for being our guest tonight, Bruce. And hopefully I'll have this show up again by tomorrow. Okay?
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, and we wish you a lot of success with your book. It's a great book, and I highly recommend to everybody to get it.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you feel that way about it, and I hope that your listening audience can get something out of it that might help them see a little bit more than they see at this present moment.
Well, books like yours are very important. It helps us get in touch with what's going on in the world today and trying to understand how we fit in. So right now my center's starting to fill up, but we do on Friday and Saturday nights we do haunted tours here. We take people out and let them come become aware of the various things around them that we can't normally see with our naked eye. Mm. So anyhow, our center's starting to go up right now, so we're off to do a tour. So we want to thank you again, Bruce Adams, prophetormadman.com. Make sure to purchase his book. And this is Mary Sutherland wishing you and yours a good night. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.